The following is a presentation of the Matt Talk Podcast Network.
Hello, wrestling fans. It's time for the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. The World Wrestling Resource was made that you as a wrestler, parent, coach, or fan can have access to all the resources of the very best in the world of wrestling. I'm three-time wrestling writer and broadcaster of the year, Jason Bryant, and I want you to join me, along with John McGovern and world champions Terry Brands and Dennis Hall, as we talk training tips, topical discussion, mental preparation, and more on the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. World Wrestling Resource is sponsored by Defense Soap. Find World Wrestling Resource on Facebook at facebook.com/World Wrestling Resource and follow us on Twitter at WWRESO. And, of course, on the web at worldwrestlingresource.com. Now on to the show as we join John McGovern, Terry Brands, and Dennis Hall. And welcome to episode 15 of the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. As always, joined by John McGovern, Dennis Hall, and Terry Brands. Today, also joined by women's national team coach Terry Steiner. We're going to talk all three styles as we recap the U.S. Open. We're going to start with Coach McGovern here for a moment because there's a lot of Iowa on this call with Dennis joining us a little bit later. A lot of Iowa, a lot of news coming out, and there is a recent New York Times bestseller, just hit the bestseller list, the new book that co-authored by Dan Gable and Scott Schulte called A Wrestling Life. Coach McGovern, what are your thoughts on the book?
Well, yeah, actually I went to the Dubuque bookstore, and he was there last night signing, and Coach Mann and I both wrestled. I wrestled with the Hawk Club, and he wrestled for Gable, was a four-time All-American. But we got to hear him talk, and the book, A Wrestling Life, is just what it says. It's about wrestling and life. Terry, when I got in the line, I asked Gable, I said, you didn't really recruit to Alan Freed. He chose you, and he said, you know, do you when you look at that, you kind of know why he chose you, because you talked about you didn't necessarily have the higher performance at the time at Fargo Nationals, but you kind of know what traits, why he picked you.
Well, Freed was a couple of, he was a year younger, I think. And, you know, I can't speak for Gable, but one of the things that, and the same thing with the Steiner brothers, that I think was really, you know, that guy, I guess, got Gable's attention and the attention of the program was, you know, Steiners were extremely working, hard-working people. They were winners, but even more important than that, it was the way that they approached the sport and the way that they trained, the way that they ran, the way that they lifted, the way that they did everything, the way that they paid attention to the details of their academics. And it was kind of an era where, you know, if you remember that New Era poster came out, it was kind of an era where the athletic department was asking him to clean a lot of that, you know, that old school drinking and raising hell downtown stuff up. So, you know, with Troy and Terry Steiner, there was no maintenance. There's no maintenance with those guys. It was about coming in. They wanted to win national championships each and every year, and they trained like they were on a mission to do that. And so it made sense to him to really go after those guys. And as far as, you know, the Freed thing, you got local guys with me and my brother, and he didn't, you know, he recruited us, and then he kind of asked us if he wanted to recruit Freed, and he asked the same thing with Zapital. I don't care who you recruit, you know. That's what it was about here. It was about, you know, the tougher the room is, the tougher you're going to get, and it was the same thing with the Steiner brothers. And it was just a really, you know, you got 40% of your lineup there that was really pretty low maintenance from a drinking, from a raising heck point of view, from, you know, being ineligible academically. That stuff just didn't happen. So that's really, you know, where the short of that story is. And I'll let Terry fill in the better parts.
Well, Jason, if I can add, actually Gable talks about that in his book. He says Brands guys never drank, smoked, and today they're married with families and they've always been good men, but he talks about trying to help his athletes and working every level, everything at highest level, discipline, school, social life, family, and none of these is more important than the others, and they all require the same level of dedication for your whole way of life, and you're right, Terry. I mean, I think, the Steiners and you guys exemplify that level, and I really and just love the way you guys lived your lives that way too. But go ahead, Terry, your thoughts.
Well, I think, you know, just to add on to what Jerry Brand said, I mean, I think it was an era that, you know, they had to have some change there. I mean, things weren't going how they needed to go, and then what was the expectation for the Iowa wrestling program, and so things had to change. And you know, I believe Ellen was a year younger than me, 2 years younger than Terry. But you know, I think if Ellen was a year older than me, it might have been a different story. You know, I mean, I think he would have brought Ellen in. I think Ellen was an extremely talented person and a hard worker himself. So you know, I think some of it came down to just luck and you know, being you know, at the age of a recruitment at the time before Ellen. You know, I think Ellen was, you know, obviously he was a high power recruit and someone everyone was looking at, and he wanted to come to Iowa. So I think those tables could have turned, you know, just if he would have been a year older than us. But I do believe that once we were in the barn, I think that Gable realized what he had, and he realized that, you know, he had what he needed, and he needed to spend money elsewhere. And that's what he did. And you know, he was loyal to us as his athletes, and he was going to, you know, put his eggs in that basket. And so that's what he did. You know, we had a lot of success.
I don't know. Did you guys want anything, Terry? Have you read the book? You guys read the book?
Yes, I did. It's outstanding. That's what I'll add.
Yeah.
I haven't read the book.
Yeah, and I've got actually two copies. I got an advanced copy that Scott Schulte had sent me, I guess, before the final product came out, and I read that. And, you know, I'd mentioned this on the show that I did with him on Short Time, and it was like, you know, because we all know in wrestling, we all know, I mean, you guys, you know, wrestled under the guy, so you know all these Gable stories. And then, you know, me as being, as an Iowa outsider, but as a wrestling junkie, I know enough Gable stories to probably, you know, I've informed my wife so much on, you know, like that Access interview that he did a couple months ago. But I'm sitting there, and Kyle Klingman, and you guys know how dry Kyle is and how matter-of-fact he is when he asks questions. He asked me, we're having dinner right before a dual meet down in Cedar Falls earlier this year. And he goes, is there anything in this book that people who already know Gable already don't know, or they don't know? And I'm like, I'm curious. So I went back and I read it, and I'm like, yeah, there's stuff. I surely didn't know this stuff. And then as I talk to people that have read the book that know Gable, there's a lot of stuff in there that's never been published before. There's a lot of been written about Coach Gable, but you know, was there anything, John, that you know, or actually anything, Terry, that Brands, that is, that came out in this book that you're like, oh wow, I didn't know that. That's interesting.
Well, yeah, I mean, anytime you have that kind of detail, and he goes back and he's in depth in a lot of the areas, and then there's a lesson at each chapter. It's not like an ongoing story about him. It's individual chapters about, you know, certain, you know, problems that he solved. And it's a unique write, and it's, you know, it's very solid, and it's outstanding. It's Gable, you know.
Yeah, and it's also hitting the New York Times bestseller list under the sports category, which that's, to me, I guess all of us can agree, that's great for the sport of wrestling. Anytime a wrestling book is going to hit, you know, when you write a book, you want to be on the New York Times bestseller list, and Coach Gable and Scott Schulte's book, they're on the bestseller list. They got another reprint coming. It's going to be an audio book. I mean, this thing's going to take off.
Well, he was at number 7 last week. I didn't see where they are this week, but that's very impressive. And like you said, it's good for wrestling, and it's good for humanity, you know, more than anything else.
The book, again, A Wrestling Life, it's by Scott Schulte and Dan Gibb. You can find it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, everywhere. It's in mainstream stuff. You can find it everywhere. So I got a couple copies on my desk, and it was a good read. Now we'll move into our discussion on the U.S. Open. And again, Terry Steiner, women's national team coach out there in Colorado Springs. You know, we're talking about the depth of women's wrestling and how it's been growing over the years. You've been out there in the Springs for a while. You know, we've got the 8 weights, 6 weights. I mean, how does it work for you as a coach to know that, you know, you've had the 4 weights for the Olympic weights, and then you've added in for the world team trials at the non-Olympic weights, so to speak? How does the new weight class format work for you, and how you're trying to put the team together, Coach?
Well, it definitely affects, you know, our team. I mean, you know, getting more opportunity and two more weights is definitely a plus for women's wrestling. And you know, now it's making the most of it and making sure we get our stars, you know, at the right weights and not bunched up. And I think that's the biggest challenge right now is, you know, we have some of our, you know, previous medalists and people that have shown success on the international level, and you know, they're bunched up at weight classes. So I think the challenge right now is, you know, trying to help them understand that, you know, we can do both, win individually and win as a team. But if we're thinking about winning as a team, we can't be bunched up, and we have to get our stars separated some as much as we can. But you know, it is great. It's great having the competition. You know, I mean, they're pushing each other, and that's always good, and that's always what's going to drive people to be better, is someone behind or someone in front of you pushing you. And so that's what I do like. We have some weights with a lot of competition right now, and you know, without that, it's hard. I mean, some people are motivated just internally, and they know what they want, and they'll move forward. Others are motivated by a little push from behind or the person ahead of them. So to have that right now is probably the best thing that we have going forward. But we have a real opportunity. I mean, we feel that, you know, we've been close the last couple of years, and I think we have a real opportunity this year with the World Championships here in Las Vegas to get the job done. And we've been close too many times with not getting the job done. So I'm hoping we can put our puzzle together and make it happen this year in September.
Of course, the last time the World Championships were held in the United States back in 2003, I mean, it was my first Worlds in there, Madison Square Garden, and the women's program was on a roll. I mean, it was like, you know, every win Japan was picking up, the U.S. was picking up a win. I mean, it was medals all over the place. I mean, you know, is that something that, you know, from a women's standpoint, we don't really talk about, you know, the home turf nearly as much, but, you know, everybody travels, and, you know, we're in a situation here in the United States where most of the world championships, we have the onus of travel on us and on Canada. And, you know, when you talk about the power nations in women's wrestling, how much does the actual landscape, you know, we've talked about acclimations camps and things like that, how much of a benefit do you think having the event in Las Vegas is really going to be for the American women this year?
Well, I think it is. I mean, history shows that when we have events here, we tend to do a better job and competing at home. So I think for the women, the emotional side of it, I think being at home, being in front of their families and their friends, and being on home turf, I think it can add a great benefit to us. But we still have to prepare, you know, and we still have to have the right people in the lineup and you know, doing the right things in the process of doing it. But, you know, I do think it will help us, you know, and then hopefully Vegas does its job and distracts some people. And and so, you know, I think, you know, we're in a position right now that we can make some good things happen. But there's a lot of work to be done yet. I mean, we have a lot of work to be done over the next 4 months. So that's what I'm focusing on now. The end result, that will take care of itself if we have the right process in place and do the right things from now until then. Things will take care of themselves in Las Vegas.
And now, as far as you talked about the depth at 48 kilos, obviously one of the stronger weights. I mean, here's just how strong this weight class is. For those who may not pay a whole lot of attention to women's wrestling, you actually should, is the fourth place finisher, Aaron Golston, is a multiple-time junior world medalist. So, and then you've got Vicky Anthony, who's won, what, three or four junior world titles. Alyssa Lampe's a bronze medalist. Clarissa Chun's an Olympic medalist and a world champion. So, I mean, that there right there shows you the depth at 48. Then you've got 53, Whitney Condor's been successful at the junior level, made a couple world teams. The depth there, probably not what you would expect at 53 behind Condor. And this is where maybe where you're talking about moving people into the right weights, because at 58, Helen Maroulis, who won the Open, beating Kelsey Campbell, Olympian, and then Allie Reagan sitting there third, and then you've got a hammer, an up-and-comer, Tashaia Allo. This kid is probably, if you want, people want to talk about Aaron Pico on the freestyle level as being an up-and-comer, as someone to watch, Tashaia Allo is the up-and-comer one to watch on the women's freestyle side, at least in that age group. So, Terry, when you talk about moving people down to weights, I mean, obviously you're looking at getting the right wrestlers in the Olympic weights to qualify the wrestlers for the, you know, to qualify the nation for the Olympic Games. But then you see a situation that the way the weight classes work, Sharon Jacobson hadn't won a U.S. Open in 9 years, and she's been doing MMA. She comes out and wins the U.S. Open. So a lot of storylines here at these lower weights.
Yeah, you know, I think 48 is a pretty much standalone weight. I don't think, you know, any of our 48-kilo people can move up and be a factor at 53 at the international level. It's just too much of a weight gap. But you know, whoever does come through at 48 kilos, you know, we expect them to be ready, and they're going to be tested and proven. And so whoever comes through that weight class, will be ready to go. And so, you know, we move on to 53, 55, 58. I mean, those are three weight classes that are very close together. And, you know, we're going to need a, you know, we focus mostly on the Olympic weights, 53 and 58, but you know, to win the world championship, so we're gonna need a medal at 55 as well. And so, you know, it's getting the people separated and getting the people that are going to be in contention to win the titles and win the medals at all three of those weights. And they're tough weights. I mean, if you look, you know, at the international scene, I mean, 53 and 58 are probably the deepest weights there are with the international field. So, you know, we're going to have to be ready to go. And then, so who comes out and who separates and who goes what weight? I mean, that's still yet to be seen. But regardless, you know, whoever makes the team at these weights, we're going to need medals. And really, through the lineup, I mean, if you go to 60 and 63 kilos, I mean, and all the way up to 75, I mean, you know, to win the world championship this year, you know, you're not going to win the world championship with four medals. I mean, you're just not. And you're going to need 5 to 6 medals to win the championship, and some of those are going to have to be gold. So we realize that, you know, it's not an easy process. I mean, you know, there's a reason why we haven't won the world title in you know, 16 years, I think. It's tough to do. And so we're just hoping that, you know, we can make this happen. And we do have the right people. And now it's just getting the, you know, them all to the right weights and getting them distributed so we can all perform and not be sitting in the stands in September.
Now, the champion at 60 kilos, Lee James Provisor, married to Ben Provisor. They recently had a child. And Lee was on the world team back in 2007 in Baku. And this is something that, being a women's coach, as the athletes become older and start families and stuff, this is something that, you know, Coach Brands and Coach McGovern, you got to deal with maybe your guys, you know, okay, your wife's having a kid. Now, Coach Steiner, you have to deal with your athlete having a child, and this is not the first time through it. And from your experiences, what is something you've learned about women's athletes when they're wrestling and then they take time away to become parents and then they come back? Obviously, we've seen it with Christy Davis, Sarah McMahon, and obviously, you know, Jackie Catalina's got a couple of kids. So, I mean, you know, from a coaching standpoint, how does that change your strategy a little bit? I'm curious on, like, how you coach through childbirth.
Well, you know, I think it can be a healthy thing. You know, I think that sometimes when they're the younger athlete, they're younger and they make mistakes and they make bad decisions and things like that. And, you know, all of a sudden when they start having a family, I mean, they tend to grow up a little bit and they tend to make wiser decisions and they tend to make decisions that are useful, for not only themselves, but their family. And they tend to make more solid decisions. So it's not always a bad thing. I mean, you know, you can't be wrestling, you know, 24 hours a day. You need some distraction. You need something to take you away from the sport and give you a balance in life a little bit. And that can happen, you know, if it's the right situation and the right relationships and things like that. I mean, those things can be very helpful and useful, both in their wrestling, you know, wrestling career as well, you know, for their wrestling career as well. So I guess it's just what it is, what it is. I mean, we have people that are, you know, that have more than one aspect to their lives. And you know, I think as long as they don't get too many irons in the fire, I mean, I think it's possible to do, and it's healthy to do. But, you know, you definitely have to have focus, and you definitely have to have time management and those kind of skills to do that and do it successfully. So, but that's what I've seen. I mean, when we have athletes that have had children and want to compete again, they seem to come back a little bit more grown up, a little bit wiser with their decisions, a little bit better use of their time. And it kind of goes hand in hand. And I think you see the same thing at the college level. You know, when you're in season and you know, athletes' grades tend to be better because they have to be disciplined with their time. And, you know, they're focusing on their academics when they need to. They're focusing on their wrestling when they need to. And then all of a sudden in the spring of the year when, you know, the NCAA season is over, all of a sudden you see grades fall sometimes because they don't have that structure and they don't have that discipline. And so I think that sometimes in this situation, it can force them to have that structure and discipline that they need to have in all aspects of their lives. So I don't look at it as a good or a bad thing. It's what it is. And if it happens, you know, when they have children and they start a family, I mean, that probably means that we've kept them in the system longer and kept them around longer, and that's always good.
And just to add on that, I remember Coach Gable, he said to me, he said, every day has something you enjoy doing, like 50 minutes of something to recover. But I've noticed since I've had a son, when I come home, some about it recharges me. I feel like I have more energy for wrestling and life. And so I think what Terry's saying, I mean, I think you guys see it as parents too. I mean, so that doesn't inspire you. I mean, that recharges your batteries. And I think sometimes people don't always realize like that recovery is worked into it too with stuff that you love outside of the sport.
Yeah, and I think you realize that you are a true role model then, and maybe not to someone you don't know, but you're being a role model to your own son or daughter, and you're showing them, you know, that there has to be discipline, there has to be structure and things like that. And you know, kids, even at a young age.
That was Terry Steiner, women's national team coach, talking a little bit of women's freestyle and some of the things that go into coaching women. Now we go to men's freestyle, and now we're going to focus this with Coach Brands here. Interesting dynamic. I mean, I was watching some of these finals, some of these semis. I mean, we saw some results that, you know, some of us maybe didn't expect to see. We saw some great finishes. We saw some not so great finishes. And let's start right at the beginning. 57 kilos, Tony Ramos, right there for the Hawk Club and Titan Mercury Wrestling Club. Late finish. The guy, you know, knows how to win late. I mean, it was that big scramble there. Got the 4 point. Got the three. You know, was it the two and the two? I can't remember exactly what the sequence was against Hochstrasser in the finals. But you know, Hochstrasser came out, went right after him, and Tony just finds ways to win late. I mean, this is something that we've seen from him recently. And you know, how does this bode going into the World Team Trials for Tony Ramos?
Well, you got the top spot, and you're to the two out of three. Situation there, so obviously it gives him a little bit of an advantage, but you know, it's one thing that we definitely have to correct. And you know, Terry Steiner was talking a lot about, you know, getting people to you know, getting their lineup solid and work to do, and that's where it is with us too. And I'm sure the Greco guys are saying the same thing up and down the lineup all over the country. So you know, he's got to get better. He is a winner, and that stuff is always going to serve him well. And I think that if he can open up more, and, you know, he was in on a few of those shots, and, you know, he's got to do a better job of, you know, finishing there. And I think he understands, you know, the position, and we'll see where it goes from there. But that was a magnificent. I mean, he got in and just horsed him up and then threw him off the back for four. And that's pretty impressive the way that he did that. And, you know, with the rear tripod going out of bounds there and giving a point of caution instead of the two, which to me seemed unprecedented. It was just a really, really thrilling thing for a Hawkeye or an Iowa wrestling fan.
Now, as Coach Steiner mentioned, it talking about the lowest weight class there, that they're pretty solid. And you've got to look at this without the Ramos McDonough type of maybe the coaching blinders on for a second. It looks like anybody that the U.S. kind of can put out on the mat at 57 kilos could be a medal threat come the World Championships. I mean, it's not like Ramos is a shoe-in to win the trials, but there's a lot of depth. There's a lot of different looks that this weight class gives.
Well, I agree. The thing there is we got to put a guy on the mat that can win from a objective USA point of view. And who is that guy, you know? So whoever steps up is going to be that guy. And if he's not thinking that he's going to be the guy, if it's about making the world team, then, you know, maybe you ought to go do something else. So that's where I'm at with it. And these are really qualifiers. And, you know, the way that great competitors approach these things, these are really qualifiers that you know, you have to win these to get onto this team. And so you got to be at your best. And then when you get to the world, you really got to slap yourself across the face and get moving, because it's important. It's important to the country. It's important to, you know, our programs, where the individuals come from, and everything else that's involved with the sport of wrestling. So it's yeah, you're right. It's a big deal. And there are a lot of different, there's a lot of dynamic looks there.
61 kilos, Reese Humphrey of the New York Athletic Club tops Kendrick Maple, also of the NYAC, exciting 7-6 match. You know, it was interesting here, guys, and this was a semifinal. You had Alan Waters of the Missouri Wrestling Foundation, who wrestled this year at 125, wrestling in the semifinals here at 61 kilos against Kendrick Maple, who 2 years ago wrestled at 149 pounds. So it's funny what these weight classes are doing, Coach. I mean, you've got a 25-pounder and a 49-pounder meeting at 61 kilos in a semifinal. Ultimately, that weight was won by Humphrey, who's been on a couple world teams here. But definitely freestyle the open gives you some looks you wouldn't exactly see come the college season.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, it shows you how competitive a guy like Alan Waters is. I mean, he's just an intense competitor. I love the way that he approaches the sport, you know. I thought that Humphrey was standing on a live wire there at the end of that match. I'm not sure, you know, that's Humphrey's style, I guess. But man alive, I was getting a little nervous for him. Not that I necessarily wanted him to win over the other guy, but, you know, he's probably the best guy outside of Scott credentially, you know, you could say, right? And Scott with the Olympic bronze and Humphrey being on a world team. And really, if you remember that match against France in the 2011 World Championships in Turkey, you remember that match?
Oh, yeah.
That was, you know, that's another one of those things. And he kind of wrestled Maple like that at the end of the match, so I was getting a little nervous for him there. But, you know, he showed that, you know, he was ahead. I think it was 7-4 or 7-3 maybe, and then gave up two takedowns or whatever right there at the end. And then, you know, was kind of getting toward the edge of the mat and, you know, wrestle. That's what I say. But he's a guy that can win. You know, I love him too. I think that his ability and the things that he does and the skills that he possesses, he's very, very dangerous in there, and it's definitely a threat if he's thinking straight.
65 kilos, probably the deepest weight in the United States. I mean, when we look at Jason Ness, who takes 5 years off, comes back, qualifies for the trials out of winning the Northeast Regionals, comes to the Open, takes seventh. I mean, you got a guy that was a Hodge winner taking seventh, and you look at it, it's Metcalf, Oliver, Russell, Stieber, Molinaro, Chamberlain, Ness. I mean, geez, and that is, that's nuts. But when we talk about the depth of the weight, ultimately, Brent Metcalf, Jordan Oliver, the final 2-1, kind of from a wrestling fan standpoint, Coach Brands, I'm not going to lie, that was a snoozer for me.
I agree. And, you know, the one thing about both Ramos and Metcalf that we've, you know, talked about here in camp in Iowa City is, you know, hey, guys, go open up, man. That's what you guys are about. That's what put you here in the first place. And, you know, if you remember the match, he was in on a couple and Oliver kicked out, and then Oliver took that long injury break, which, again, these are situations that you don't see internationally. You know, you don't see those long injury breaks. Those officials are dragging you out there, and you better tape up quick and go, and our trainers better be on that. And so, you know, that definitely, you know, favored the slow pace and shutting down. And then, you know, you saw him come out and really test him and had him I don't know if you remember that one flurry kind of where Metcalf overreacted and got his flank exposed to him. And I don't know if Oliver was ready for that kind of reaction, but that definitely, he exposed him there a little bit after that break. So, you know, we got to do a better job. And you're right, it was kind of a snoozer. But if you watch the intricate details of the wrestling, and if you're a big fan of, you know, combat style wrestling, I mean, Metcalf did a good job of controlling that, and he was in, like I said, he was in there a couple of times. But, you know, the Russell Oliver match was tight, and that was controversial at the end. I don't know if you saw that. Objectively, you know, maybe Oliver's a better, you know, threat on the world stage to win the title than Russell is, but I thought that that point could have went to either guy, and actually I thought that Russell turned down in that Wizard pretty hard. And, you know, the other thing with Russell, he beat Stever twice, I believe. And, you know, that's you know, that's a big deal. You're beating a four-time NCAA champion. I don't care if it's freestyle or collegiate or Greco. It really doesn't matter much to me. Logan Stever can compete, and he's going to be a force. You know, it's that simple.
Moving to 70 kilos, this was one for quite a bit of controversy with the Nick Marable Dustin Schlater final, and the big score, it was 4-2 Marable, but the sequence came from a scoreless period, and then Schlater's driving into Marable. The call went initially for Schlater, and then it was reviewed and it went for Marable. Basically, Schlater driving into Marable. Marable countered on the edge, close to the edge, and then, you know, after the review, it was 4, and then it was 4-2 the rest of the way. Now, I'm looking at this and I'm watching it, and I don't know if they've changed this rule. I was always under the impression that if you're getting attacked, you can't and you're already into the zone, you can't counter and score points. I mean, it's like, if anything, I thought it was 1 for Schlater, if not 4 for Schlater. I don't see how Marable could have scored 4 out of that sequence. But in a call situation like that, I mean, from a coaching standpoint, Coach Brands, your athlete gets a call against him that he doesn't agree with. What do you got to do to get back to the drawing board and make sure it's like, all right, now instead of sitting out, he's got to go through the challenge tournament. I mean, where's the mindset there?
Well, the mindset is continue to move forward. I mean, we saw what Slater's capable of, and I love it. You know, it gives us another guy there. But again, you talk about there's not a lot of action after that flurry, really, was there? And so you gotta be able to create that action to get back in on him again, and then obviously get better keeping your hips in. But I'm with you on that. That was a funny call to me. And here's the bottom line. I mean, if they give it to Schlater, you know, Marable, and I could probably say the same thing, well, that could have went the other way. And the same thing with the Oliver Russell. It was so close. You know, sometimes you're in a situation as an official that you're going to have to pick. And really, neither call is right or wrong. And, you know, and that's kind of where, as an athlete, be aware of that. I mean, the lesson in this call maybe would be, as an athlete, be aware of that, control the things that you can control, and take it out of the official's hands. You know, it's one of those things where, wow, you know, I mean, I'm with you on that call, but, you know, same thing with Marable if it goes the other way, you know. So I don't know, you know, it's a lot of you knows and I don't knows here, but where I'm at with that match is, you know, create more things. It's kind of the same thing that hurt Marable in the World Cup there. I think he went 2-2 and really his matches look the same, and he's not doing maybe enough to you know, really become a title threat on the world stage. And that's what we want, because that guy is strong, he's big, he's explosive, and it just doesn't make sense not to use those attributes to, you know, work toward a world gold medal. And if Slater gets on that team, or Green, or, you know, whoever, I think, who was, well, LaValle beat St. John, so LaValle was 4th, I believe, right?
That's correct.
So, you know, those are the 5 guys that are going to the trials. And, you know, I mean, there's St. John's out of retirement, first time on the mat. And LaValle, you know, came out and took it to him. And you know, St. John really didn't respond to him until it was too late. And, you know, those are just really good lessons of controlling the things that you can. And I think Green smoked LaValle in the third place match, right? What was the score of that?
Yes, 13-0, decked him.
Yeah, so, you know, I don't. He must have been up 9-0 and then wing-dinged him again. I don't know. But, you know, these guys are strong and they're explosive. And, you know, I would like to see more wrestling out, especially the 2 finals guys. I mean, Slater, he's old maybe, or older, but, man, go, right?
Yeah, it's not a. This isn't a dig at Marable. I mean, it's not. It's not under. It's not his fault that the people disagree with the calls the referees made. So
agree.
I mean,
agree.
I like both Marable and Slater. I mean, it's. I mean, remember Slater's been on a world team back. In 2009. So I mean, when he was still in college.
Yeah, in Herning, Denmark, he wrestled, and again, man, I remember that match with India there with Kumar, and I believe wasn't that the match?
Yeah,
He was right in that, and it was one of those things where I really like Dustin and I like how he wrestles, and I feel the same thing about Marable. And that call, it's not a dig at either guy, right? It's more of, hey, don't let it come down to that. If I'm Marable, don't get your butt in the zone, and if I'm Slater, don't get carried through. So
74 kilos. We know Jordan Burroughs sitting out because of the past world medalists. Don't have to, get a bye right to the best of three finals. So David Taylor wins the U.S. Open, beating Andrew Howe. A lot of the story here, though, wasn't about Taylor or Howe. It was about Anthony Valencia, high school senior. He's heading to wrestle for Zeke Jones down at Arizona State, taking third. And, the big win, the Tech fall over Tyler Caldwell, who won the University Worlds last year. I mean, yeah, Taylor wins it. We're waiting to see Taylor and Burroughs. Howe's been right there winning the U.S. Open. But, Terry, it's a high school senior taking third at the Open at this weight class. That is quite impressive.
It's very impressive, and it shows the level of skill and attributes that he possesses. And I don't know. I mean, I'm sure I always say I don't know if you saw. You see every match. I mean, you're the guru here. And that match with Howe, I mean, he was up, I think, 4-0 for a while, right? Wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, he was.
And that was, again, I think he maybe needed some, maybe needed a little bit more shape is the way it looked for me. He kind of stepped out in the back, and then Howe kind of started taking it to him. But that was very impressive in itself, and it was looking like, maybe he was going to be able to, go to the final there. So, I don't know. Howe seems like not on timing-wise. He wasn't on. Usually you get some really, really good, explosive things that are happening, and maybe, I don't know what's going on with his knees and his ankles in there, but maybe his lateral motion is a little, maybe he was coming off an injury, and I don't know. That's all speculation, but then to stand in there 2-0 with Taylor, I just figured that he would be able to put some points on the board, and I thought Taylor would light it up a little better too. I thought that would be a better match.
Yeah, that's when you're kind of expecting maybe a 10-8, something like that,
Yeah, I mean, because, I figured, I don't know, it doesn't matter what I figured, but I figured Howe gets in, he scores, and maybe, gets a little bit of a lead, and then Taylor comes back and does the Magic Man stuff, and all of a sudden, like you said, you got a high-scoring bout. But interesting there, and this Godley, what was he? Was he fifth or sixth?
He was sixth, but he was in the semis last year against Burroughs at the Open, and then
is an athlete. He is an athlete, and he's got some really, really good wrestling attributes that are impressive to me. And man, I would love to see him open up someday. I don't know what's going on inside his head, the mental and the emotional side of it. But wow, if you could develop that mentality in that kid, he can wrestle. I mean, I really like what he can do. He's just in spurts, He just got to get it to be consistent.
Yeah, this is one guy that when we were talking about at the Open last year, he was the one guy people were like, who is this guy? I mean, he wrestled at NC State. He's an assistant coach with Kerry Colat down at Campbell. So, you want to talk about a guy. He's got a pretty good guy to train under down there. So, he's still kind of green when you're talking about the freestyle. But, yeah, he is – a tremendous athlete. Good story right there, too, with Quentin Guy.
Well, you need to tell Colat to pull out a pair of them old Nikes that he was wearing and put them and tell Godley to put them in his closet and then, let that old ghost to Colat, because Colat could wrestle, as we all know. And that's a great mentor to have, so I would imagine that he's going to be, continue to build. You're right, Valencia, to have that kind of kid coming up in third, and then you look at the juniors with Fix and these guys, and man, I mean, it just looks good for America, and with the young guys coming through and believing they can win it. 96 kilo Snyder, a college freshman, it's good. It's very, very good for our sport domestically, and it's I can tell you that I think that with Snyder in there, and the Russians, you know, they're probably shaking a little bit after watching him compete. I mean, I don't want to get them all stirred up, but I mean, I like it. I like it. And that doesn't mean that he's going to be the guy, but I like the young guys coming in and not taking back seats. I think that's very important.
I'll get to Snyder in a moment, but 86 kilos, obviously. Ed Ruth was on the world team last year. Jake Herbert really finally getting his feet back under him. He did wrestle Ruth in the Flow Premier League right before the NCAA Championships, was winning the match, got pinned. Then Herbert comes out, wins 13-11 in the semis over Ruth, beats Keith Gavin, the guy he's battled for years to make world team spots. You know, Ruth takes third, Duran wins fourth, John Reeder fifth. And Jake Herbert, you know how much personality this guy has. And people are talking about the mullet, and they're saying, oh, McIlravey. I'm saying no, that is a Rob Eider mullet, true and true. How glorious was that thing? Forget about his wrestling. How about his hair?
I'm going to even go above and beyond Rob Eider. I'm going to go to that was Jake Herbert stands alone mullet.
Jake Herbert stands alone. Gotcha. All right.
And the reason why I say that is because he said I had to make it as nasty as I could because nobody with a haircut like this is going to lose a wrestling match. That's what he told me. So that's pretty. I would say what's the word? Not confident. Very, very confident in using the hair to motivate him. That's pretty impressive stuff. That should have been. And you know what? Those two scores in there, the 4-pointer and the 2-pointer, they were that was the inside trip that Gavin hit. That was nice. Those are all ESPN play of the day, number ones to me. I love that inside trip and that throw that Herbert hit him in. Didn't he hit him in a throw, or what was the deal with that?
Yeah, he had a chest lock on the edge. He basically stopped the motion and then basically, professional wrestling, suplexed him over.
Yeah, high arch, stopped him, like you said, went into that full squat and took him straight over. I mean, it was classic. And you know what I like about that camp over there in Ann Arbor is they believe in what they're doing, and they continue to get their guys to believe that way. And Herbert coming back after 2012, I don't think he's been on the mat. You know, did he wrestle in the Open in 2013? I don't believe he did.
I don't believe he did. I think this has been his first real competition. I mean, he's had one-offs here and there, but, coming back from that surgery,
right,
he was off the mat for quite a while.
And then he's walking with a swagger again. And last year, if you remember at the Worlds there in Tashkent, he was there, and he's Jake Herbert. He's a great personality for the sport of wrestling, and you can't say enough about that and the way that he promotes the sport.
Now move to 97, of course, Kyle Snyder, NCAA runner-up, past junior world champion, and a two-time world medalist, and he's got Jake Varner. You know, and Varner was pushed to the edge by J.D. Bergman there in the semis, a guy that's given him problems. But, you know, when you look at people talk about passing the torch and things like, and granted, this is the Open, this isn't the world team, but from a confidence standpoint, when you're that young guy, and this doesn't happen very often in the United States, when you're that young guy and you beat the Olympic champion on, you know, as you're 19 years old, I mean, this is a loaded question. How much confidence does that have to give you, not just for this year, but in your ability as a wrestler overall?
Well, I think you know the answer to that. And it's very, again, it's one of those things that it's really good for wrestling. It's good for our country. It's good for, it should be good for Varner. I mean, that would get my attention. Holy smokes, right? You want to be on the top stand of the Olympic Games again and win your world title this year. This is you get your attention. And same thing with those other guys down there. And, you know, the top three are probably, I think Bergman was third, right? He was third. And then, you know, those top three guys have all been on the world stage before. You know, Snyder was on the junior team, but you know these older guys, and this young kid standing on top of your weight class. Yeah, it should fire you up. It should motivate you. And again, like I said earlier about these other weight class with Valencia in there, it's awesome. It's great.
And last freestyle weight, Tervell Delagnev did not have to wrestle at the Open, but did anyway. He was, I guess, a little slow. I mean, recovered from an injury, didn't wrestle a whole lot at the World Cup, beat Zach Ray in the finals. And again, this is a weight where the United States seems to be anybody they put out there on the mat could be a potential medal threat. I mean, you've got Tervell, who's won a couple medals. Don Bradley's a junior world champion. Tyrell Fortson's university world champion. I mean, Nick Gwizdowski really, really coming into his own as a freestyler. And, of course, Zach Ray has been right there, you know, battling the best for a number of years. So this is definitely a weight. I mean, Tervell's been kind of the class of the weight, save 2010. But, you know, he didn't have to wrestle in the open, gets his feet under him, and now you think he's in a good spot heading into the trials.
Yeah, I like it too. I think it was important, especially after the World Cup when he had those two matches, and then, you know, I think he probably wanted more, but coming off that injury and making the right call with his coaching staff and his support group down there or over there, and you know, obviously it was the right thing to do. I don't know if I agree with you on the international side. I think they're all very capable with their credentials. But I think that Tervell is a little bit above that. And I think that he showed that even, you know, ever since he's been on the world team, that he really could be the best guy in the world. I mean, I really believe that about him. Again, it's not one of those things where I know him very well, but there's something there that holds him back just enough to have him be third twice and not get into the final or not win it, or, you know, where he was in 11, I think he finished off the podium, and then 2012 he finished off the podium when what's his name, Kamazov came out and you know, took him out of the bracket there and those kind of things. But I'll tell you what, he trains, he lives a lifestyle, he's got a lot of really, really good things going for him. And Gwizdowski, I agree there, also coming into his own, but I don't know. I'm not sure why he forfeited there. That's a concern to me, unless he was hurt and, you know, those kind of things. But Fortune is a talent, and you know, when's he going to train? You know, I'm not calling him out, but I'll say it. I'll say it publicly right here on the radio show with the nation's most knowledgeable host, Jason Bryant. Why does not Tyler Fortune train to get in shape? You know, that's the question I have. And if you had that answer, I would be willing to hear it right now.
Well, I don't have that answer. And obviously, he's now down in, I think he's still down in Tempe, right? Even though he's with Titan Mercury. I mean, I don't know if he's down there with Sunkist or not, but that maybe leads to the better question. I mean, Tyrell, as talented as he is, has always been kind of an enigma in where he's going. Although, I mean, obviously we know how talented he is. You know, Division II champ, multiple age group titles. But I don't have an answer for you, because I don't know if I'm qualified enough to give you an answer. But if I was,
come on.
But if I was,
come on.
I'm not around him as a coach. That's what I'm saying. I'm not around him enough to give you any insight. So I will have to basically kind of, I'm not pleading the fifth. I have no answer for that. But I probably see your question and agree with the question rather.
Right. I don't know if you're, I mean, you're the most qualified guy in America, man.
That's not a coach.
No, it's not a coaching question. You also have, you know, you can look at a guy wrestle and then draw a, especially that guy, especially this last tournament, right? Or am I, or was I seeing things?
Well, the Bradley fall, I think that was where he, I don't know if it was a situation where he tried to rely on his talents for, you know, over under throws. And when you got a guy that's kind of more compact at heavyweight than Bradley, you can't be lazy with the throw. And he got planted and pretty much, okay, I'm on my back, I'm done. So that was that Conti semi. And then, you know, I don't know if Tyrell, I mean, it might take Tervell to retire for Tyrell to make that team. That's where I think I agree with you in the terms of Tervell being ahead of this group. I don't think there's a significant drop off, but there's enough of a gap. I think Tyrell any other day could be number two, or he could be number five, and I think he could be, you know, a world medalist. I don't know, you know, obviously
agree.
Getting past it, it's just, you know, we've seen it at the age group levels. It's just, you know, I don't have an answer to your question about shape.
But you do know, see what you just said, that's what I was trying to say earlier. I don't, and that's exactly right. He could go anywhere from two to five, but I just don't see him consistently being there. And, you know, get him on the world team, and then this, it's a different concern. You know, now you're dealing with, well, let's stay stable emotionally through this tournament, because he's not going to get tested as much conditionally. So, you know, there, you know, how do you want to approach that? Do you want to, you know, hope to get on the American team and then roll when you get to the world? Because, like I said, you got to win here first. And so that's all I was saying there. And I like the guy. I like him. And he's a personable fella. And, you know, he could help our country. Not saying that he could beat Bradley or Ray, for that matter. But he could help our country and be more competitive that way. So that's all I'm saying there. How's that?
I think that works. Now we're shifting over to Greco-Roman and talking with resident World Wrestling Resource Greco-Roman expert extraordinaire Dennis Hall. Dennis, actually, before we even get to the Greco-Roman, I understand you're getting ready for a wedding with one of your Greco-Roman proteges.
Yeah, no, I'm heading out to Colorado this weekend to go to Nate Angle's wedding, standing up in it for him. So should be a good time. Going to be a lot of wrestlers out there.
Yeah, of course, Nate Angle wrestled up at Missouri Valley, then went to Northern, wrestled Greco, then, you know, joined the Army. Now he was a coach at Air Force. Now he's an assistant coach with Joel Sherritt at Navy. So one of the Greco guys doing a little bit of this college coaching thing.
Yeah, he's doing a good job.
So we're giving Nate a little bit of a plug here on the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. Now, as we talk with Greco-Roman, our last episode, we talked about some of the rules, and there were some tweaks and clarifications after we did that episode, and some things are put in place now. Some places aren't going to be put into place until after 2016. But one thing that we did have changes, at least on the United States side of things, was the format. And with, you know, it, unlike freestyle, both men's and women's, there is a, you know, where they have the U.S. Open, and then they go, okay, now we're going to the trials. The Open champ sits out, or returning world medalist sits out. Greco going a little differently. They're going, the first match of the U.S. Open was match one of the world team trials, and then they're finishing it off in Ithaca, June 4th, 5th, and 6th. So, first of all, Dennis, what are your thoughts on that format and how it goes in selecting the world team?
I think the format, it's going to be hard to say. The format, to me, doesn't make a ton of sense. It ends up keeping a lot of guys from being able to train for another month and a half. I prefer, you know, that everybody gets a chance. I mean, if you have a bad day at the national championships, you're out of the world team trial. So that's a part that I don't like, because every once in a while you're going to have a bad match. But, you know, we'll see how it plays out this year if we get the best team, you know, after the trials.
Well, similar to freestyle, there's actually the two guys that get to sit out, that got to sit out right to the end, Spencer Mango, Andy Bisic, because they had placed in the top five. Of course, Mango was fifth and Bisic was a bronze medalist, the first one since Jermell Byers back in 2009. But we look at some of the weights. Obviously, Spencer Mango beat Jesse Thielke, who comes down to 59 kilos. And obviously, you know Thielke from being in Wisconsin. This is a guy that wrestled 141 during the college season, down at 59 kilos, and generally a guy that just seems much more comfortable wrestling Greco-Roman. I mean, do you see a little bit of yourself in him in some cases where, you know what, I like the folk style thing, but I really just need to be Greco.
You know, I see he has a lot of attacking situations. He attacks really well on his feet. I just don't know why he hasn't transitioned that in his folk style wrestling. I think he could be a dominant folk style wrestler. He's got great intensity on his feet, and he's getting a lot of scoring opportunities. So, you know, I feel bad for him because he hasn't had the success he was hoping for. But I think part of it is just, you know, doing what you feel comfortable. And I think sometimes when you're at transition of folk style, you don't, people tell you can't throw all the time in folk style. And, you know, I don't know if that's the case, where he's just kind of giving up on his folk style, or if he's going to go back after he gets done training for the Olympics.
Now, one thing is obviously is the weigh-ins, because the college season is you got anywhere from, you know, 14 to 16 weigh-ins, depending on where you go to school. And that's a lot. You know, if you talk about, okay, he makes 59. Okay, he should have no problem making 133. Well, you're making 133 every single week, twice a week. It's a little different in terms, you know, take us through that in terms of being able, when you're dropping weight and you have a process versus trying to have to cut it each and every week.
The college season is a grueling season, and you know what? you'd have to be totally disciplined to make 30, or Jesse would have to be totally disciplined to make 33 every week. And it just wears and tears on the mind as the season gets longer. And, you know, I think from holding your weight down, sometimes you pick up little injuries that can set you back too. So it is, it's a struggle. A lot of the athletes deal with that mindset, the head games that it takes to be at your weight all the time. You know, it just comes down to the individual and what they think is best.
Well, of course, in Jesse's defense, I don't want to beat him up here because, you know, I mean, he's definitely an interesting personality, a fun kid to be around. But, of course, Ryan Taylor, their 25-pounder, he was the one that was having some weight management issues. He moved up to 33, which sent Jesse up to 41, which sent Rylan Lubeck up to 149. So we're not beating up on Jesse on all this. But, again, one thing we need to talk about, we've talked about Jesse, he was second, but it's Spencer Mango goes up 1-0. In the series, which will be going through Ithaca. And obviously Spencer's been the man at this weight since 2008, still maybe a little small for 59. You see it in his medal matches the last 2 years. He's just been kind of not over. He's just as strong as these guys. He's just not as big, and he can't really get in there and force that action to draw those passivity calls and whatnot. So, you know, what is it about what makes Spencer Mango such a good wrestler in Greco-Roman?
Yeah, he's just athletic as heck. He's, you know, I equate him to a cat. You throw a cat on the ground, it's going to land every single time in perfect position. And Spencer's very tough to get out of position. You know, I just hope that if, you know, he's on the world team this year, if he beats Fielke, for the trials, that, you know what, he opens up a little bit because he's not using his athleticism the way he should be. You know, I think if he'd take a little few more chances on the mat, he'd be finding himself winning those matches that he's losing.
Let's move up to 66 kilos. Bryce Sidoris taking out Alejandro Sancho of the New York Athletic Club, and another guy that's come through the Northern program. 1-0 win by Sidoris, goes up 1-0. In the series, Sidoris was a replacement on the world team last year, actually did win a match, and a guy that one of the few guys that actually has that college background with in Greco-Roman. He was a two-time All-American at Navy, now wrestling for the United States Marine Corps. And, you know, with Sidoris being thrown into that situation last year where he didn't initially make the team and was put on the team after the fact, how much do you think that experience in going to the Worlds, winning a match, is big for him in developing his future in Greco-Roman wrestling?
Well, I think anytime you wrestle at the World Championships, it's an eye-opener. And for him to win a match last year, that's great. He just has to keep building on what he's been working on all year long. I think he's definitely big enough for the weight class. He's strong enough. You just got to go out there and impose his will on his opponents and just keep developing every single day.
71 kilos, Justin Harry Lester of the U.S. Army, again, two-time world medalist back in 06 and 07, still going strong. Beats Pat Smith rather comfortably, 7-2. Pat Smith of Minnesota Storm hits a nice four-point headlock at the end of the first period. And then, you know, Smith did turn him late in parterre, but Lester's still the class here. I mean, you know, again, kind of like you talk about how athletic athletic Mango is, but, you know, Lester brings that experience, the tenacity. He's even rocking a Wesley Snipes like blade type of flat top right now. I mean, he's got everything going for him right now.
Yeah, you know, hopefully he can make the world team and go to Las Vegas and win a medal for that weight class. We can use the medals. He's got the skills. He's got the mindset. He just got to prepare himself to the best of his ability and make sure he's in great shape, because once he gets you moving and he can wrestle hard for 6 minutes, he's tough to beat.
Well, we talked about this too with the freestyle and the women's side of things. With a world championship in the United States, how much do you think that's going to help guys like Lester?
Oh, I think it's going to help him a ton. He'll be able to get his weight under control easier. It's always harder cutting weight overseas, even though you know, you got different types of food overseas. There's nothing like being at home in your own country wrestling. And I think, you know, from the fan base, it's going to help too. It gives you that energy. You know, I wrestled in the Olympics in 96 in Atlanta, and, you know, by far it was one of the coolest places to wrestle because it was in our own country.
Of course, we can't just assume Mr. Lester's going to make the world team. Obviously, there's two more matches to go, so not going to sell Mr. Smith short because he lives right down the street from us. I don't want to hear from it. No, and now we go to 80 kilos. Patrick Martinez and C.J. Myers, a couple guys people may not recognize right off the bat. Well, Patrick Martinez wrestled at Wyoming, then he ended up wrestling at Nebraska Kearney Division II, was training down with J.D. Robbins before joining the Army. He's in the WCAP program. Courtney Myers was in the Marines. Now he's with Army's WCAP. Returning world teamer Joe Rao takes fourth. Past world teamer Chaney Haight is third. So we're seeing somebody new is going to be on the world team this year. And Martinez won the first match over Myers 3-1. So Martinez, a guy that's kind of got a chip on his shoulder, something to prove, and could be a real dangerous threat as he develops as a Greco-Roman wrestler.
Yeah, no, I know. I know Provisor's been working out with him quite a bit. It just comes down to going out there and making that first world team, and I know. For them, once they make that team, then they got to change their mindset from making a team. And that's a part that these guys got to instantly buy in to being a medal contender. And it comes down to, what they're doing right now. And that's a tough part for those guys that have never been on a world team before is, they get excited, they make the team, but then, 3-4 months later, you got to win a medal or try to. So, hopefully these guys are ready for the task.
Moving to 85 kilos, Jordan Holm wins his fourth U.S. Open, beats John Anderson rather comfortably at 85. And Jordan's been really, really turning it on the last couple of years. Obviously, he won a couple medals internationally this year, but still looking for that first win, that first medal at the World Championships. And what do you think it's going to be the difference for him to kind of, clear that hurdle and not just win a match, but move on and become a medalist for the United States?
I think having success internationally this last winter is a huge deal. If you have a few four or five losses where you just haven't, been at your best, but then you have a good couple tournaments, that makes a difference in your mindset. Now he knows he can compete with the best in the world, and he just got to keep improving every single day.
98 kilos, Kaylor Williams, two-time world teamer at 98 Army WCAP program, takes out Kevin Beasley of the Virginia Beach Regional Training Center, and that's a name some people that follow Greco may not understand, at least at the senior level. But at the junior level, he's been on two junior world teams, wrestles for my alma mater down at Old Dominion NCAA qualifier, and Kaylor kind of won this one. It sparts. It was comfortably throwing Beasley. Obviously, there's some cautions, but I talked to Kevin yesterday on my Old Dominion show, and he actually believes that he's in the match. He thinks he can battle Kaylor Williams, but right now, Kaylor is the favorite. And when you see a guy like Beasley, who's a college sophomore, you see the same thing kind of with Thielke, that there's not a lot of college guys that are actually active in there, and they're making inroads into the U.S. Open finals. What's it mean for USA Wrestling and the Greco-Roman portion? You get a guy like Kaylor Williams, who's come from the college world. They drop this program. He's getting that fine-tuning with the Army, and then you get guys in college that love Greco, and they're making the Open while they're in college.
Yeah, that's a great thing that those guys are doing. I think the more college athletes we can get in there, deepens the field at every single weight class, and that's where we need to draw a lot of our athletes from. I mean, I know they're going to come from different areas too, and that some people want them training Greco full time. It doesn't matter where you're coming from. If you want to be the best, you'll find a way to do it, and that's what these guys are doing right now by, taking a chance and rushing into Greco Nationals and trying to make teams, and that. It's only going to strengthen our program in this country by having more guys see the opportunities out there.
And heavyweight, Fear the Beard, Robbie Smith, pins Toby Erickson. Robbie's just been on a different level the last couple of years. He's still looking for that first world medal. And, there's a guy like Robbie Smith just makes you love Greco-Roman wrestling because, I mean, as a big guy, heavyweight, got the beard. He's not going to be necessarily, you know, throwing mango type of power bombs out there, but he's definitely going to throw some arm throws at you. He's good with that front headlock, head pinch, and you know, he's a guy that can really, you know, get the fans behind Greco-Roman wrestling with his personality alone.
Yeah, no, he's good for the sport. He just got to keep improving. His, you know, his big thing is he's got to be able to score outside of his front headlock. If he can get another couple attacks, I think he'll be just fine and have a good shot at winning a medal this year.
Is part of the Matt Talk Podcast Network. For more wrestling podcasts, head over to MattTalkOnline.com.